Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our October meeting started with the usual roundtable discussion, moderated by Doug Shufelt.
Okay, so scripts. Here it is. Whatever, right? Just stick in there a couple of bicycle calls, and that's the problem with
people. So this doesn't
could be
exist
a pH.
Now? Do you mind if you all calls don't happen yet? Or do you want to tie a database to this thing?
It did.
Googling it. Yeah. Rewrite map can call an external helper program. So you can do it right inside mod rewrite. Wow. That's obscure.
Rewrite map can also do an EVM file.
Yeah, but this is all MySQL.
Basically a key value lookup, right? Like, is it doing a like or is it doing a where blah equals blah?
It would have to be equality, I suspect. I'm thinking either it's quality or it begins. Hey, you want, as long as it's indexed, that's okay. I have no problem with that.
If you're going to do a lot of them, that external program should be probably something that a socket called to run main where he has a database connection open. Or there isn't very much traffic.
Well, that's MySQL itself, right? That's MySQL itself, right? Because it's already got
ready to process. You still have to tear down, you have to build up to tear down the database connection.
I'll give a microsecond on something that's going to take 10, 20 milliseconds anyway. Like,
depends on, like, I understand what you're saying.
Depends,
depends
on
only if the database is local. Please tell me the MySQL database is at least running right on the web server.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
It's all one big fat machine.
That's good. Obscure.
Yeah. Tons of power. Good thing too, because actually, another question. I'm new to spam assassin too. So, who's actually used spam assassin? One, two, three, four, five. Okay, a few. So, what the general effect? Let me just go through here, and you can tell me where I'm getting it wrong here. But spam assassin will base the postfix receives, it'll pass it on to the content filter spam assassin. Spam assassin rates it, and actually then will either pass it back for reprocessing to the postfix queue, or it does what?
Well, that's kind of the problem, is there's about 8 different ways to integrate spam assassin with postfix. There is no standard.
No, what will it do if it detects spam? Will it feed it back into the queue and say, here, send me anyway?
If you're doing standard after queuing, it will feed it back to postfix and it'll simply have a header of this is spam.
Yeah. And then what? It's going to send me, postfix will say, I'm going to give it to them anyway.
Yeah.
But then the email client takes a look at the square bracket spam square bracket.
The email client. We're talking about the MTA here, though, right?
Yeah, you can set it up so that Spam Assassin can filter it and not send back to Postfix if it's higher than a certain level. But by default, it'll just send it back to Postfix, and it's just passed on to the client all the way down.
Just
with
the header.
Yeah.
But if you're actually relaying mail for somebody else, you're acting as a domain that actually relays mail.
There's no easy way.
You don't want to keep that passing through to another MTA because they're going to say, hey, you're a spam bot. I'm going to take you off.
Yeah.
Put you on the blacklist.
Yeah. So if it's above a certain spam threshold, you just drop it on the floor.
And what's the spec for that?
None.
Trial and error.
Yeah. No, I'm still a bit new on that. So the specifics of actually, say, to drop it, not the process, it would be what?
Somewhere in your spam assassin config.
Yeah.
There's going to be somewhere in one of the config files of one of the pieces of this solution, and that could be postfix, that could be spam assassin, that could be mail drop, that could be proc mail, that could be amavisd if you're using that. Like, there's so many different places this could be. It's crazy, but somewhere there will be a config that basically says anything above this threshold, just
that's spam assassin by itself, just where it actually away. Says, I'm going to recognize the spam is above, say, default 5, right?
Yeah.
That's what would be the default. Make it more aggressive, make it 4 or 3, whatever you want. And,
yeah.
But again, then what? It's just going to pass it back to the rest of the queue. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, is spam assassin will short circuit that behavior, but that's a configuration specific setting.
I never seen that. What is that?
I don't know which file it's in.
There is the main spam assassin config. There are short circuit options, which basically are, if it matches this, do this, matches this, do this, it breaks shit if you do it wrong, because you can still have no mail going there. But
so, okay, there's a short circuit. So it's
in the main config file, the short circuit. I saw that keyword and I went,
I don't think you're actually looking for the short circuit keywords, though.
No?
Not for this.
Yeah, there's short circuits plugin, basically.
Yeah, that's what short circuit's for. It's not the word short circuit. That does something else in Spam Assassin, but it's like, I can't remember. Right now I'm using AVFSD, and it's like tag level and tag level 2. I don't remember what they map to in Spam Assassin.
I guess, well, because I just started looking at it today, so it's like, okay, well, good time, you know.
But there's two thresholds. At one threshold, it will optionally modify the subject line and insert a spam header with a report of why it's spam. And the second threshold is just delete this thing altogether and stop processing.
I don't know if they're defined.
They're both in the same config file. That I know for sure. So you can find one, you found both.
Keep reading, I guess. Okay.
It's a lot safer if you can decide it's spam. SMTP transaction time.
Yes.
And refuse to mail.
Yes.
Because then, if you're killing spam
before
you shouldn't, it will retry potentially, depending on how much they respect.
Well, I also use Graylist too. Right? So.
Hey?
Also,
are you using Graylist?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really dangerous to just drop mail on the trail until you really know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're wrong,
well, you're always going to get false positives. Go on. I'm
so
guys go
spam through.
No, but you can configure it.
Mail, you're in shit.
Okay.
Right?
You can configure it, though, to drop it into a file.
Okay.
So, you're really
so what, basically,
that.
What you're saying is that you guys have done this before in the past. You're saying just let all spam through.
If it gets
basically
spam, get pass it back to procmail, get procmail to put it in the spam folder.
I'm worried about
the users don't have access to anything in the system.
So if they don't, then safest way is to put it into a pipeline, not like a quarantine, if you have a disk area to hold it there, so if people start complaining about filed mails not going through, your mailman can go in and find the stuff, tweak the settings so that crap quits getting done that to it, and requeue that mail so it goes on to the proper owner. If your users can't look in the spam,
they can't, they have no access. They
have no access.
There's just a relay.
If you have any.
They know that you're in the picture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah,
so
sure.
They know who to complain to.
They just flag it to spam and then somebody's got to stream look after how to handle it.
But then you get on a blacklist.
You only get on a blacklist if you send the mail.
But
if you're configured, if your relay is configured to only relay for domains and hosts that you approve,
yes,
your chances of getting spammed are.
I'm wrong with two blacklists right now.
Well, is that because your users are doing stupid shit?
No, this is actually people coming in.
Well, then you're probably configured as an open relay.
No, we're not. We checked.
Then what got you on the blacklist? I think you solved the problem of what got you on the blacklist.
Well, right now, I think it was Bell Alliance on East has got us on some kind of list right now.
How many rejects to the sender of the spam say they rejected? Because that will get you blacklisted for sure.
Yeah.
It's a spoofed mail, right?
Yeah. It might be back. Was it Backscatter they mentioned?
Yeah. Exactly.
If you have
Backscatter's caused some of that.
Yeah.
Dan, if you've got any budget at all, just go buy a Barracuda appliance.
Well, this is a non-profit, so.
Yeah, okay, you have no budget.
How many people is that?
Thousands.
Yeah, exactly. So, out of that, one gets hired.
Barracuda's hardware?
Not bottle
somewhere. Well, the mail system I run has about roughly 3,000 users on it. We actually put a Barracuda in to catch the outbound spam. Because on average, we get about 2 users a day with compromised passwords. Out of 3,000 users. So someone is legit logging in to our mail server, authenticating, and sending spam through my back-end mail server with a legitimate account.
So let me just recap that again. The file that would be spam assassin takes it, whatever is set for file, whatever is default, and it sees it, it should be dropped on the floor and say goodbye, or it should just pass it on and tag it as spam. And let the other MTA take care of it.
Tag it.
Tag it and pass it on.
If you're man in the middle, just tag. The problem is, you also have to make sure that you're catching outbound spam from yourself.
Yeah, the only thing initiated is cron jobs, that's there, so.
And backscatter.
Yeah. I'll have it done.
If you got 7,000 users on your mail system, probably, if you don't want to spend a lot of time administering, some of that shit made for America.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to spend that much money on a mail and to tweak and tune this.
Yep.
And keep you off blacklist. Get you taken off blacklist. When you get on blacklist, it's a time consuming.
It's a commercial vendor. They basically bundle Spam Assassin with a really nice, good, and commercial support.
What's the
good
value of
commercial support, actually?
I don't know.
Hardware or software appliance? If you, up until recently, there was hardware only.
Seven?
So that's a VM as well.
Seven? I don't know.
Hmm?
Might keep it at 12 grand if you're lucky.
Sorry, what?
Well, once your 7,000 users can't send mail because you're on so many blacklists,
oh, okay.
It'll happen. Trust me.
Well,
so,
you guys that point, I've never heard
of it. Just give my IP addresses and stay out of it.
Yeah.
we've got a slash, what, 28, I think?
That's right. You could.
Actually, wait about
rotate.
Wait about 4 months and then sell a few IP4 addresses. You'll have paid for the box.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, those are my questions, so thank you very much. Okay, some good.
Yeah, you're into abandoned hope, all you who enter your territory.
Well, this is a volunteer basis, too.
That may be a picture of your question.
Good luck.
You're right.
Been there.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Okay, just a bit of an announcement. Since this is a Linux announcement as opposed to a Unix group announcement, I kind of figure maybe letting people know about it. At next month's Muddy Waters Computer Society meeting, I will be doing a demo of a working LTSP machine that I had just got up and running 2 weeks ago. So if anybody wants to drop by and take a look at it, or if there's an expert who wants to come in and explain more than I can, feel free.
Time and location?
Date, time, location.
Okay, the date is going to be on the 6th, which is a week before the Unix group here. It's at 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. sharp, because that's when the janitor locks the doors.
Huh.
And it's at 3390 Portage, way out by Cavalier.
That's, November 6th?
November 6th.
Okay.
And it's a church, and there's parking in the rear, so just enter through the rear door and head downstairs.
Are there any questions, comments?
Okay, so I've got a question.
Sure.
Along the same lines as Dan's question, is anybody using AMAVIS?
Hmm?
AMAVIS D?
I have.
All right. Never mind. I'll talk to you afterwards.
Do you wish to complain about AMAVIS?
Configuring it is a black art.
Yes.
Just follow what I did. Just literally follow the how-to, and it's done. That's what I did. I said, yeah, it's done. It works.
I couldn't help you because I did what he did.
All right. Okay. Has to be the
cut and paste season.
This has to be the worst documented piece of mail software I've ever seen.
I won't argue that.
Huh.
All right. Okay. Just follow the how-to.
So what's so good about it that everybody is using?
Integrates antivirus scanning and anti-spam checking in one step.
Huh.
That's it.
And it handles before you pull in with postfix, so before you actually accept the mail, it will do it, as opposed to default with spam assassin, and really cheaply done as after queue, and you just screw up.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm using Milter, which is Yeah, the current new PostFix has actually supported Milter since, turns out, for quite a few years now. So anything that's a Milter-based plugin, like that's effective. That's sort of all the best features of before Q and all the best features of after Q. Well, okay, all the best features of before Q and some of the advantages of after Q. But it keeps everything compartmentalized quite nicely. It does fork one heck of a lot of processes, though. Because it starts up the Milter engine for every inbound TCP connection. So you need a...
You could fork bomb yourself effectively.
Yep.
Like, you literally could screw yourself with open handles.
Well, no, because PostFix limits the number of incoming connections.
Yeah.
So there is a protection. You can't quite fork bomb yourself without deliberately letting yourself be fork bombed. No, I mean, it works. It's just I can't figure out. I have a heck of a time figuring out if it's working or not. And the logging is useless.
So add some botnet and add some spam yourself.
Yeah, there is. There's a test spam. What's it called?
Icar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, given what Adam just said about Milter support, this is for PostFix you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Getting back to Dan's thing about SpamAssassin, there is a SpamAss Milter, which is an interface to SpamAssassin that I've been using with SendMail for years, and it works quite nicely. And in there, the second threshold that Adam was talking about is a settable parameter in SpamAss Milter. So you've got the one threshold for SpamAssassin that basically just says tag it at this level, and then SpamAss Milter has a higher threshold where you can just have it, you know, reject mail or whatever.
And that's in line with the transact conversation at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing a piece of this.
Yeah, Milter stands for mail filter.
It's amazing how much crap comes through. It just continues. I log it. I'm sure killing log it. I'm looking at the actual SpamAssassin log and thinking, boop, go pass. Boop, pass. Well, the mails will.
Mm-hmm.
It's like constant.
Mm-hmm. 92% of email last month was spam. So.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is...
the other rate was for Viagra?
SpamAssassin can also be quite resource intensive. So if you've got other ways of countering spam, put them in line first.
Yeah, I've done that too, yeah.
The best thing to put as your first line of defense is a few good RBLs. The spam house Zen list is probably the best one.
That's the first one. It makes you wonder, though, too, is how much is actual misconfigured mailers on the other side. But
a lot.
It's not getting through now, where maybe it was before.
I enforced reverse DNS successful lookups for all inbound email, which immediately cut out the volume of incoming spam by about 90%. It also cut about 10% of all my legitimate email. Mm-hmm. I just decided that I really don't want to talk to companies that can't figure out DNS, which is perhaps a more extreme option than most people have.
Yeah.
But having said that, I get about 1,000 connection attempts a day on average. I mean, the shit comes in waves still, but you know, steady state's about 1,000 connection attempts a day. Of that, about 200 to 300 are some idiot who's running a server at some subsidiary of Server Beach, and they haven't even configured reverse DNS at all for that subnet. And I don't know what kind of mail server it is, but it tries to hit me about once every 10 minutes, steady, 24 by 7.
The other thing that can help if you've got a good defense is using DKIM in the bypass.
Yeah.
Signatures. They aren't completely widespread accepted, but if your filters get mistuned, it can keep you from blocking large quantities of mail that is legitimate, because providers that are in business and doing really legitimate do take DKI on your signature.
Okay, so they add you to that,
okay.
Up across the,
right.
Add you to that up across the, basically whitelisting.
It's more to determine the legitimacy of the sending organization. I mean, you can still get bullshit through there, but most of the time your users actually want the bullshit. No, I'm serious. I mean, that's the problem with spam. When you start looking at very much mail, the style of the users, several hundred of them can get hit with something that they consider spam, and the other 500 think it's not spam.
Yeah, I'm on tons of distributions from companies, whatnot. And yeah, I want to hear what you have to say every now and then, so
yeah.
I accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one problem I found with trusting DKIM signatures is when you run into the problem that I have as a sender, and that's compromised user accounts. So if you don't have decent password security, DKIM is arguably going to reduce your reputation. So
that's why we also used SMTP ring memory for compromised accounts. So they can only send a few mail individually, they can only send a few mails in a period of time.
Yeah. On that same server, I have a business that needs to send out 200 emails at a time.
Tell them
to go to center.
Contract somebody.
Do you want another filter like what Adam was talking about? Enforce valid hellos. I put that on my.
Oh yes,
my personal.
Enforce what?
Yes.
Sorry.
Gets lots of crap away.
Yeah. I got that all the domains and.
Just stuff. To make sure that whatever they say hello with is a domain.
It's valid.
Oh yeah. That one catches a lot of Exchange servers, though.
In the world.
So what's the downside, he says. Yeah, okay.
Is there a downside? I'm not seeing one here. Yeah, I've got reject invalid hellos. I got reject non-port qualifying domain name hello host names. And reject unknown hello host names. And a ton of stuff on the recipient resources, too.
Yeah, you're already cutting out a good chunk of the Exchange organizations out there. GameStop, that was the one that kept bugging me. You figure a company like GameStop could figure out how to do DNS? No, they can't.
GameStop?
GameStop.
Oh, GameStop.
Too busy gaming.
Yeah.
So, changing gears, has anybody used this? Whatever the hell the distributed stuff is. I saw it on Slashdot. I went, oh, clicky, and read about it. Has anybody used it at all? It's supposed to be like distributed Facebook where you can link between two different things, except that your data stays on one server. For us, we just host it ourselves.
Diaspora.
All right. Just curious.
So if you want to link to Bruce Schneier, that's the place to go, right? Okay.
I think even he laughed about it on his blog. No, just
stink or list.
These guys were around, like, there were this, like, four college kids that they got $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in white charter. They built this thing. And then they went away in a hole for like 9 months, something like that. And what they came out with was this app that people looked at and just said, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. They really overestimated the scope of the problem they're trying to solve, and also turns out they weren't actually good coders. So just recently they said, okay, well, we're out of money. Okay, we're open sourcing this project. Just like,
yeah. Last gasp, you desperate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also Tent, which I've just started hearing about. It's the same idea. It's more like a Twitter thing. Like it's a decentralized,
their GPIO,
whatever it's called, I don't know what it's called. You run your own servers and like the same kind of notion.
I think. Anyone got any easy questions?
Gilbert?
No stumpers as much?
No.
I keep on wanting to build a call center, but
exactly what chipset. And then a PCI Express one times Intel 1000, I think the model it gets loaded is E1000E or something. It was working great for a couple weeks, and then recently, well, at least a couple weeks ago, or maybe a few days, randomly the ping or latency would spike 2 seconds, sometimes being the worst case. Did some tests, and it seemed like it was just on the network. Like, it wasn't the path between, like, from the router to the ISP or anything like that. Pinging Google or whoever, latency was always fine. But going from any machine on the local network to the router was, just, I mean, average times of a millisecond or less, and then you get, like, 2,000 milliseconds. And actually, in the past couple of days, it seemed to have vanished.
Syslog,
no.
E-message, nothing?
You're on your local network pinging the internal interface of your firewall, or you're pinging across the network?
Internal interface of the firewall. I'm running it.
On that interface, or
on the network interface? On that interface. So it's all nothing to do with external nets.
Yep,
is it
just
the first ping, or is it all of them?
Like I said, if I run the test for 20 minutes or something like that, come back, I'd see that there would be at least one that's like 2,000 milliseconds plus, but the average of them were 1 millisecond.
It could be an ARP thing, because the counter starts when you send it before you, because the counter starts when you tell the kernel to send the packet, and there has to be an ARP on both ways in order to resolve the IP to a MAC.
Yeah.
So it would only pop up later if the ARP tag was flushing.
And they flush periodically. Flush every 5 minutes.
Yeah, but as long as there's packets leaving, the off table entry should stay fresh.
They keep on
two IP addresses, like another machine with the same IP address.
It's possible, kind of unlikely.
But you wouldn't get the response, right?
And
no,
you wouldn't be able to
well
at that point anyway.
No.
Yeah.
Press of a brand, you know, like a time zone, and there's another RFID like response.
It smells like a memory.
I don't know. I mean, it.
And like I said, it seemed to have vanished as well. So.
Oh, it'll come back.
I sure will.
Take the Wireshark or TCP dump a little. And just
to
watch what's going on.
Is it one of the one IP address to find that place? It's in a bridge with a wireless card, but...
Oh.
It's a bridge.
That
lived
it. Ping that Ethernet device itself, though, right? I mean,
is it a BR0 code? And it's only one interface added to that bridge?
Yes. So, I'm still pinging that... It's bridged just so that I can basically get the wireless and the local network to show up as like basically one and the same same leases and stuff like that.
So many possible places to look. But
yeah, and then start moving pieces to start moving your bridge.
Yeah, turn off the wireless first and then. It's not going to piss off too many people.
Yeah.
It's your old way, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So turn off the wireless and run the same test again.
Run OpenBSD.
That too.
If you're running wireless and wired, what's the possibility of any node out there having both wireless and wired interfaces on there?
Well, if they're for Mac addresses, it doesn't matter.
Sure. Not if you have a screwed up configuration.
No, they'll have different Mac addresses.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Not if you bridge them.
I have two interfaces. I have to be careful about becoming a router. Right?
Or
if
you're
not
on the same
supposed
layer
to be a router. I turn on
you're on the same layer, too. You're therefore not a router. It could be a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a problem.
But no, there's no nothing plugged in. That's wireless and wire.
Perfect.
That's what we're doing.
That's good.
Just make sure that on at least when you're testing, if you don't want to turn off wireless, testing from, make sure it's only got one.
And it's
one host with two devices on the same layer of network. Unless they're configured as some sort of password, it's usually a recipe for some problem.
Cooking for some content.
Yeah. I've never actually done that and said, oh, I'm glad I did that.
People
hard.
Yeah.
And both active network.
Yeah.
One's going to the modem and the other one just switches. So
always acting like a router.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more MUG meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.